One of the effects of climate changing around the world is a difference in the oceans, several differences actually, but we'll focus in this discussion on ocean acidity. The waves crashing on the beach look the same, but the chemical composition of the water is just a bit different. We all know what acidity means, but here's a chance to find out what it means for the oceans and the creatures that live in them. Abel Valdivia is an ocean scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity. He'll be in Reading tomorrow evening at 5 to speak at the Reading Library. The presentation is sponsored by the Earth Water Climate Group, and Abel Valdivia is our guest on the exchange right now. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Give us just sort of the large nut question about when we talk about acidification in the ocean, what it really means.
Right. So I like to say that sometimes we call the ocean acidification problem the other carbon dioxide problem. So we know that the world is warming because CO2 in our carbon dioxide is increasing. And that CO2 is entering also into the oceans. And basically, really simple chemical reactions made the water more acidic. CO2 actually reacts with water to form carbonic acid, and then that carbonic acid can dissociate into different hydrogens, protons, and then basically making the water more acidic. So when we're talking about the acidity of the water, we're talking about pH, and pH is measured kind of in a scale that is going from 0 to 14. And natural pH, the same pH that we have in our blood, is around 7. The pH in the oceans, kind of global average, is around 8.1 right now.
And so so on that scale, obviously, lower is more acidic. And so if the general average is 8.1, has it sunk far below that? I mean, is it really a large difference in number or just a subtle one?
Right. So, yeah, you're right. So 8.1 is a global average, but that doesn't mean that is. I mean, we need to compare that with what was before 100 years ago, 200 years ago, before the kind of the pre-industrial levels. And global average have actually declined the pH in 0.1 unit. And that doesn't mean too much for the general public, but we need to think about that this pH scale is in a logarithmic scale. So we're talking about that pH have declined from 8.2 to 8.1 on the global oceans. We are talking about increasing acidity of 30%.
How much percent?
30.
Oh, okay. So that's a significant increase in acidity there.
That is a really significant increase. So it's basically going from kind of neutral acidity to 30% or 30% more acidic. And that has a huge implication for organisms that live in the ocean, especially those ones that have shells and have skeletons that are made of calcium carbonate. So calcium carbonate is basically limestone, and it's formed by organisms that produce shells and skeletons. For example, corals and coral reefs, they produce this calcium carbonate. And in order to produce this calcium carbonate, the chemistry of the water needs to be right with the temperature and salinity in order for these organisms to actually secrete this calcium carbonate. When the pH actually lowers, the ability of these organisms to produce these skeletons and shells is really, really compromised.
And Abel Valdivia, is it fairly evenly distributed across the world's oceans, or is it very different, say, from the South Pacific to the North Atlantic or something?
Yeah, it's quite different. It's not, when we're talking about global average, this is just a number, but it's really, really region-specific. For example, across the whole, all the global oceans, pH or acidity of the water is more pronounced or is stronger in the polar regions, in the Arctic and the Antarctic, especially because the water is colder, and there is influence of fresh water from from ice melting and glaciers that are melting. And there is a simple reason for that, because CO2 and also oxygen is actually more soluble in colder water than warmer water. So the more CO2, the more this carbon dioxide the ocean absorbs, the lower the pH is going to be. And if we think about that, then all this Arctic region, especially in around Alaska, is really, really vulnerable to ocean acidification, because those ones are going to be the first regions that are going to feel this stronger effect of ocean acidification at the global level.
Abel Valdivia, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an ocean scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity. We're talking about ocean acidification. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So one of the major issues you just pointed out is animals that create shells, oysters, for example, are right, having a harder time doing so because of the disruption in the ocean with the greater acidity. So is that having effects further up the food chain? Are we noticing differences all around the oceans now?
Right, and that's one of the things that we are trying to really hard to study, because the problem is really complex to detect these kind of change reactions through the food web, because ocean acidification is quite complicated. But for example, in the west coast of the United States, there are these sea snails that really, they're called plankton, really tiny, tiny creatures that have a really small shell made of calcium carbonate, made of limestone. And these sea snails have like two wings. They look like a butterfly. They're really small and probably half inch. They're different species. And they call it the potato chips of the sea, because everyone wants to eat it, and they're kind of crunchy. And these sea snails are everywhere, and they're really, really sensitive to pH, especially lower pH, because they have this shell that the shell is really, really thin and really low pH levels, or at least like 8.0, 8.1, actually affect the capacity of this group to produce this shell. And without shells, they are really, really vulnerable to predation, and they can just basically die. Now, while the species that love to eat these sea snails are, for example, pink salmon in the west coast, probably 20 to 25% of the diet of pink salmon is made of these sea snails. And then you think that if in the future, if pH continues to decrease, because CO2 in the ocean or carbon dioxide in the ocean continues to increase, this whole population of sea snails that are called theropods, they can decline. And that's going to have a negative effect on the population of pink salmon. It's going to have, because if you eat 20%, 25% of your diet depend on one specific group, and that group is gone, you either have to adapt to it and switch your diet, or just basically decline because you don't have enough food. So that kind of chain reactions are the ones that we're probably going to see in the near future.
Abel Valdivia, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, ocean scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity. We're talking about ocean acidification. So we're talking about where things have gone so far, a reduction in pH in the ocean from 8.2 to 8.1. How much lower will that go? Will the ocean actually get to the point where it is actually corrosive, where it drops to 7 or below 7?
We could, especially in few regions that are really, really vulnerable for high CO2 levels, especially in the polar regions, especially in areas when there is an upwelling of cold water from the deep oceans. For example, this upwelling happens on the west coast of California and Washington, and it's a natural phenomenon, but the more CO2 is in the oceans, this upwelling that is bringing coal-rich water, rich in nutrients, that is basically really important for fisheries. When there is more CO2 in the oceans, I'm going to be more acidic. And there is a threshold for organisms to adjust to this acidity. At some point, they cannot adjust anymore because they don't have the capacity to create these calcium carbonate skeletons or these calcium carbonate shells. But it definitely is gonna, it's not gonna be uniform around the globe. It's gonna be really spotty. And local stressors, for example, water runoff, sedimentation, pollution, can magnify the effect of ocean acidification that it's going to have in the ocean, especially in coastal waters.
But the major driver is more carbon in the atmosphere?
At the global scale, the major driver of this lowering of pH, this like 30% increase in the acidity of the water, is CO2 emissions. At the local scale, especially in inshore waters, with coastal waters, could be both. Could be the CO2 increase in the oceans, but also increase in pollution, increase in sedimentation, increase in water runoff. The contributions of each factor, of each stressor, is depending of the site that we are talking about.
When we come back to the beginning here, and you talked about carbonic acid, I mean, that is actually in soda, is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. It is in soda. So basically, for example, just to give you a kind of a reference point, battery acid, you know, the acid that is in battery, you know, in car batteries, is the acidity is around, is between 0 and 1. So it's really, really acidic.
Very corrosive, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is really corrosive. In the other way of the spectrum, you know, this pH of 14, which is the N, is, for example, household bleach. Household bleach is around 12, 13. And baking soda, for example, is around 9. And Coke and you know, lemon juice, stomach acid, any, you know, kind of soda, especially Coke, is around between 3 and 4 and 2. So it's really, really acidic.
Wow. So if we've got carbonic acid in the oceans, it's almost like dumping large amounts of Coca-Cola in there.
That's right.
Okay, I can see where this would be disrupting the formation of shells. Now, we did talk to the Oregon State researcher who figured out if you put something like Tums in the water, you put some calcium carbonate near oysters, they have a better advantage to making shells again. But that sounds like a really difficult thing to try to do worldwide.
Right. So in 2005, 2006, the oyster fisheries in, for example, in Washington State started to decline, because the waters were acidic and the baby oysters, they were not able to actually build the shells that they were dying. And while the solutions of these oyster hatcheries, so these oyster hatcheries actually have these big tanks of water and they produce the larvae inside, but they take the water from the coastal area, so they take the water from the oceans. And while the solutions for this problem of the water that was too acidic was to just put soda ash on it and then increase the pH of the water to levels that was that were good for the oyster larvae to grow. But at the local scale in the oceans or the global level, that solution is basically really, really impractical, because we're talking about 75% of the globe is basically oceans.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely cannot do that.
All right. A lot of consideration of what to do ahead of us that will be talked about in coming years. It'll be talked about tomorrow night at 5 at the Reading Library. Abel Valdivia is the ocean scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity. We'll give a presentation there and then. And he joined us on the exchange today. Abel, thank you so much.
Thank you.